Chapter 13. The Court of the Earl King. Inside, the hall was dingy as any human dwelling. The brilliant light seen without vanished as soon as Russ stepped through the gates into the single room. Two rows of posts delineated a large central space with shadowed aisles down either side. A huge pile of coals upon a slab of stone in the centre crackled with the slow dying of fires. Torches in iron sconces attached to the posts provided inconstant light that hardly supplemented the red glow of the hearth. The room was full of man-wolves, as large as legionaries. At long tables sat hundreds of them, gnawing on glistening roasts that smelled of man-flesh, and drinking soured miod from leaden lances. Ranks of hairy backs hunched over their meals. Many wore leather harness, a few coats of mail. Their weapons were lent together in neat conical stacks at the ends of each table, and they were huge and brutal, though the man-wolves surely did not require weapons. Their teeth and claws would be sufficient to kill a great white bear. The odour of kennels assailed Russ's nose. The smell was similar to that in the Eight at a gathering of the great companies, but far stronger, and with an elusive odour of sickness, as of animals confined too long and grown distempered from it. At the head of the hall was a dais, upon which was another table, this one set transversely. In a hall of men, the space behind the high table would be screened off into separate rooms to quarter the Jarl and his family, but this was no human hall, and there were no rooms. The floor was ice, not earth covered with reeds. There were no domestic tools or utensils, no weavings to block the cold, no skins to rest on. Gnawed bones were piled where, in the verse, children would sit to listen to the stories of their elders. The walls were scored with claw marks. There was no comfort in this underverse Eight, only meat, ice, and fire. The king of this place was a great black wolf, bigger than all the others, so massive he barely fit in his throne, and hulked over the table as if on the verge of hurling it in rage. He ignored the Primarch, and conferred with his Jarls through mouthfuls of bloody flesh. On the board before him and his warriors was a long wooden platter. Already mostly consumed, the animal that provided this lord's meat was obvious from the delicate finger bones picked clean and piled upon the wood, and the long, flat shape of the body. In front of the table lay a sleeping wolf of the more usual kind, though even by the standards of Fenris it was enormous. Like all the other wolves in the room, it was ill-defined, as if composed of shadow and not of flesh. The sole thing of any craftsmanship within the room was a great spear, held horizontally to the wall behind the king by a pair of iron brackets. The spear of the Emperor. Russ's own accursed weapon. Russ strode up to the fire. When dealing with whites and fell beings, a man should never display fear. The truth of this had been shown to the Primarch many times. He stood by the fire pit. The man-wolves ignored him. They continued their feasting, biting and rending at their meal, crunching upon hands crabbed from roasting. Rib bones broke between flashing teeth. When two wolves reached for the same morsel, they snapped and snarled at one another. Violence was a moment away.
"My lord!" shouted Russ.
No attention was paid him. It was as if he were not there. He looked around at the hunched beastmen, threw back his head, and howled. The power of his call was magnified many times in that uncanny hall. The timbers shook. Snow slumped from the roof. The fire died back. Their attention was his. Silence fell. 100 pairs of yellow eyes stared at him from the gloom. The giant king stood, thrusting his granite throne backwards with ease.
"Boom! Is this who comes into my hall and makes the call of challenge?"
He spoke in rumbling Uvic, the hearth language of Fenris. A coal in the fire cracked. A patch of embers collapsed in on themselves, sending up sparks that fled for the smoke hole.
I am Leman of the Rus, Lord of Winter and War, the Great Wolf, Primarch of the Vilka Fenrika that men call Space Wolves, the Sixth Legion of Terror, Master of Fenris in the Verse, and son of the Emperor of Mankind. I beg your indulgence, Lord. The night is cold, and I have travelled far. Could I stay a while and rest? I call upon the law of hospitality.
You are a king.
I am, said Leman Russ.
Such poor tailoring is unfit for a king, said the wolf,
holding up his hand to gesture at Russ's clothes.
And you are no wolf. See the false wolf walking on 2 feet, he mocked.
The warriors laughed, a barking cacophony full of threat.
Do you know who I am, mortal?
Russ smiled openly, though within his skull he was thinking quickly. Every word he said must be weighed. Speaking poorly could trap him there forever.
One of your names is the Earl King. You are the Lord of Whites and of the Alvar, the god of the Netagangir. This is the Muspial, the hall of those who die deaths that serve no one. Those slain by age serve at your table, and here cowards are devoured.
The wolf nodded approvingly.
I am that, and many other things, he said.
His pink tongue flopped clumsily in his jaws as it formed human words. Growling further roughened his speech, which was wet and throaty to begin with.
Here, I am the great wolf like you, Leman of the Rus. I have many names, and that title belongs to me more than it belongs to you. I say thee, be gone. You have no place in my hall, creature of the verse. This is my domain. Go out and freeze.
His retainers snarled.
Hearth law demands you accept me. King to king,
shouted Russ confidently over their growling.
We are not at feud. I come here unarmed and in openness. Deny my right to warmth, and you will bring a bad cast upon your weird. This is code in the underverse as it is in the lands above.
The great wolf growled. A retainer wearing antlers and draped with charms tapped his arm, and the wolf bent low so that it might whisper into his ear.
My goatee tells me you speak truly. Sit then, join my warriors if you dare. You will not live long here. They are not welcoming of human company.
I am no ordinary man, said Russ.
And yet you are still a man. Amarok, make space for our guest.
A wolf detached itself from the mass of the feasting shadows and held out its arm in welcome, indicating a space upon the bench. Russ went over. The wolf was his equal in height, bulging with muscle, though it seemed composed solely of smoky air, and had no certain features beyond its burning eyes, ivory teeth, and lolling tongue.
You rudely followed me to this hall, said the wolf named Amarok. Enjoy the rewards for your stalking.
Grumbling man-wolves made space. Russ took his place at the table.
Take meat,
said Amarok, thrusting a wooden platter at Russ. Upon it was a man's leg, bent in half at the knee and charred.
I shall not, said Russ.
Shadow wolves snarled and yipped at each other, their language too uncouth for Russ to comprehend.
You insult us, said Amarok. Is our food not good enough for the king?
On the contrary, said Russ humbly. I honour you. I have taken advantage enough already. Your lord grants me shelter. It is all I require. Your warriors are strong. I would see them stronger still. I will not deprive them of their meat.
Then at least drink, said Amarok. Refuse this, and we shall kill you for the insult to our hospitality.
A lance was pushed at him. It was made of hammered lead, with childlike representations of wolves scratched into the rim by claw tips. The workmanship was crude beyond belief. Dark Miod filled the drinking bowl to the brim. Its surface sparkled with frost. The liquid did not move, being frozen through and through to the bowl.
I thank you,
he said, and lifted the lanx to his mouth. He bit hard, his sharp teeth shearing through lead and ice. He chewed both and swallowed. The lead was bitter. The Miod was chilled colder than the depths of the void and burned his throat, but he smiled.
A good Miod,
he said. The Shadow Wolves laughed, growling laughs. Amarok's brow wrinkled with malevolent humour.
You appear to be having trouble with your refreshment. Allow me to help you.
Amarok snatched a torch from the post behind him and held it over the bowl. With supernatural rapidity, the ice melted, and the surface of the Miod churned with miniature waves. Russ raised the lanx again. Amarok followed the bowl with the torch so that it singed Russ's hair. The Miod thrashed and bubbled, steaming now. Russ raised it to his lips and drank and drank and drank. The Miod was boiling hot. Its fumes pushed up his nose and made his eyes stream. Still, he drank, ignoring the pain. He set it down with a gasp. Amarok looked at him with wide eyes and bared teeth. All Russ's great efforts had succeeded in lowering the level of the Miod by a finger's width, but it amazed the Shadow Wolf nonetheless.
You drank, it growled. You have supped enough to make the level drop.
Most refreshing, said Russ.
He belched appreciatively. Amarok recovered.
Then drink more.
Oh, I thank you, but no. I have had my fill. Such a marvellous lanx could sate the herseers of 4/8. Your generosity knows no bounds. For this I am thankful, and will sing the praises of your tribe in the lands of above.
He ran his finger over the section he had bitten away.
I am sorry about the bowl's edge. It was a pretty thing.
The Shadow Wolves laughed, all except Amarok.
You insult me,
he snarled, and lunged for Russ. The Primarch backhanded the wolf across the muzzle as casually as if he were chastising one of his own animals. Amarok tumbled backwards with a yelp, rolled into a crouch and prepared to leap.
Enough!
Roared the great wolf.
This man of the Russ is our guest, no matter how unwelcome. You offered him meat. He declined it politely in the proper form. You offered him drink. He imbibed his fill. He abides by the hearth law. You cannot harm him, Amarok, or you risk expulsion from this place. You are a guest here as much as he.
Amarok's ears pressed against his skull, and he bowed his head, turning it to the side to expose his throat to his king.
I recognize my failing, and will be sure to correct it.
Russ's skin crawled to see this malefic abomination display the customs of the rout. Tension receded a little. The great wolf barked out a command. Servants appeared from nowhere, whisking away the platters and bones of the feast. They were the shades of men and women of advanced years, the dead who had been slain by shameful age alone.
If our guest is mighty enough to drink of our Miod, perhaps he would enjoy another challenge.
Most certainly, replied Russ,
and clapped his hands together.
The nights here are long. I am sure you would appreciate the diversion.
The Shadow Wolves howled with mirth and banged their drinking horns and lanxes on the table boards.
I am willing to provide this entertainment in exchange for a boon, said Russ.
And what boon would you ask?
I will ask a question, and you must answer.
Very well, said the great wolf. My wisdom is widely known. I think now you did not come to this hall by accident. Yet you have me intrigued, mortal. I will grant your request. 4 tasks I will set you. Let us say the drinking of the Miod was the first, and that you have already failed. Three more await.
Well, that is hardly fair. Had I known it as a mead challenge, I would have tried harder. I fail before I begin. The great wolf snarled.
You seem weak, so I will be fair. Succeed at one of these tasks, and I shall grant your request. Fail them all, and you will remain here in my service forever.
The challenge was fair, as custom demanded. Russ expected this mirroring of his own welcome to the Emperor so many years ago. He wondered if he had appeared as savage as the great wolf to his father that first time they had met.
I will fight for you, if I fail, said Russ.
The great wolf laughed. His warriors joined in.
You are too feeble to join the murder make with the enemies we face, little man. No, we require a fool to make my warriors laugh after their labors in battle. And if you are unsuccessful in the task of mirth-bringing, you shall be devoured nightly and remade to try again.
Does not sound so bad, said Russ with a careless shrug. It is in a man's nature to wish to be of use.
So we have a bargain.
We have a bargain.
The great wolf's teeth pulled back in a canine parody of a grin.
Your jesting had better be good, Leman of the Russ. My teeth are sharp.
The great wolf stood tall and raised his arms. He lifted the forefinger of his left hand and swept it downwards through the air. Russ drew in his breath at unanticipated pain. By some employment of underverse sorcery, a wound like the stroke of a single claw opened upon his right breast.
A first mark for the failure of the first challenge. Suffer for, and your soul is ours.
The shadow wolves banged their drinking vessels upon the tables, playing an insistent rhythm.
So then, the second challenge.
The rhythm increased in tempo, its coordination tumbling apart. The shadow wolves howled. At the cacophony, the massive wolf before the high table twitched and rolled over in its sleep. An old crone came limping out from among the tables. She was neither wolf nor shade, but a living being of flesh and blood, though greatly aged and infirm. She tottered to a stop before Leman Russ and looked up at him with eyes milky with cataracts.
This is my dam, said the great wolf. The den mother, the far hunter, the worst killer of men. You shall wrestle her. If you beat her, then you have won. If not, then you shall try the next challenge. Three bouts. If you are put down for 5 seconds, you lose the point. 2 points out of 3 is the winner.
Very well, said Russ.
He braced his fingers against one another and cracked his knuckles. Even he, the Emperor's executioner, who had in the past done whatever was asked of him, no matter how distasteful, balked at fighting an old woman. He reminded himself all this was weird-made, 2 steps from Maleficarum. She was as much an old woman as he was a stone. He adopted a wrestler's crouch. The crone was so buckled with age, her head came only as far as his waist.
Are you ready? He said. I will try to be gentle.
The old woman gave him a toothless smile, then rushed him, moving so quickly he was caught entirely by surprise. She locked her arms about his leg, arms that looked as feeble as kindling, possessed a terrifying strength. At her touch, his flesh chilled, and the strength flowed from his leg. His knee buckled. With a tremendous heave, she flipped him over onto his back. Before he could get up, she sprang upon his chest and knelt upon him. A bag of feathers weighed more, and yet she crushed the breath from his lungs until he was gasping. The wolves chanted, and Russ recognized in their growling speech the numbers used on Fenris.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
They howled and yipped and banged their lances. Harassed-looking wights drifted among them, topping up their drinks as quickly as they were spilled. The old woman slipped off his chest so cautiously, Russ thought she might stumble and break her wasted bones.
"First round to Mother Erla," howled the Earl King. "Again!"
The second time, Leman Russ was better prepared. The old woman came at him with the same blinding speed. This time he caught her shoulders and their arms locked. His calloused Primarch's hands gripped shoulders no more substantial than sticks wrapped in paper. But in them was the fortitude of mountains. She pushed at him hard, stronger than a full-grown conager. Russ pitted all his potency against the crone, but it was not enough. Again the chill of ice and weakness crept into his limbs, starting in his biceps where she held him so viciously, and spreading to his bones and thence his organs. Deep aches plagued him, his joints locked, his vision dimmed. His legs trembled, and the woman forced him down to one knee, then the other, so that his eye line was level with her gummy mouth. She released one of his enfeebled arms, grabbed him by the hair, and gently pushed his face down onto the iron-hard ice, where she held him as the wolves counted down from five, banging out time with their lances and horns, whether they were full or not. Russ struggled to rise. The weight of a world was upon him, a cold world composed of ice and hatred. Too much for any man to bear, Primarch or not.
"Hi! You cannot beat her! You cannot beat her!" howled the Earl King. "I tell you, you cannot win!"
The hall erupted in gleeful yips. The old woman stepped back. Russ rose shakily to his feet. Bent double, his hands upon his knees, he gasped until his strength returned. When he looked up, the old woman was stood where she had begun her assault, her back stooped, her eyes blind, limbs trembling with age, so that her fingers described tiny oscillations beyond her control. He should have been able to knock her down with a hard breath. And yet here he was, bested by a crone.
"See, my warriors, he is the best the verse has to offer. 2 out of 3.
The shadow wolves roared and howled with laughter.
"I tell you what, little man,"
said the great wolf through tears of mirth,
"before she lays you out on the ice again, if you can beat her this last time, I shall call you victorious. How is that for sport?"
Russ nodded, barely able to speak.
"Good enough."
The third time, he moved first, attacking with a berserk's fury. The old woman met him, her spindle limbs set against his thew. He pushed and strained until the sinew stood out on his neck. He might have pushed a mountain back with greater ease. The crone would not budge, and so Russ pushed all the harder. By dint of superhuman exertion, he forced the crone back half a step, bringing forth a gasp of amazement from the man-wolves. But the mightier the effort he exerted, the quicker his strength fled, and this time, without the Earl Mother doing aught but hold him in place, he sank to the ground, and the chanting of the wolves resumed its prior volume. His enfeebled fingers slipped from her arms, and Russ flopped to the floor, where he let out an involuntary groan. The wolves laughed. The old crone hobbled away cackling. Or maybe she was weeping. Russ could not tell. His world was grey, and its details hard to discern, and all pleasure was wrung out from it. Slowly he recovered, getting into a crouch, and then shakily to his feet. Not quite the full measure of his strength returned. His hair fell across his eyes, and he noticed a fresh band of grey shot through the copper blonde.
"Fetch him, Miod," growled the Earl King. "Honour our guest for his entertainment."
A shadow wolf loped to the Primarch, slopping Miod from a horn held in a clumsy half-human grip. Russ snatched the vessel and downed the contents in one.
So another challenge failed.
The Earl King did not move, but a second claw stroke opened in Russ's flesh and bled freely into his musty furs. The cut was deep. Russ did not flinch, but growled.
"Your third challenge... Oh, Lord of Whites," said Russ.
Yes, the third challenge,
one of the Earl King's hussars bayed. The wolves broke into a chorus of howls that denigrated into cruel laughter.
A simple one. You see the beast before my throne.
Russ looked at the giant wolf asleep in front of the dais.
I do.
You must move him. That is all, said the Earl King. By cunning or by brute strength, it matters not. Simply move him. To the left, to the right, back or forwards, you choose.
Very well, said Russ.
He walked to the head of the beast and stared down at it. His wolf brothers, Freki and Geri, would have reacted instinctively to his presence, knowing what he needed from them without the Primarch performing so much as a finger twitch. This affinity extended to all Fenrisian wolves. They instinctively knew he was a lord of rare power and deferred to him accordingly. The Earl King's wolf remained resolutely asleep.
Wolf, said Russ. I ask you to move.
The wolf did not so much as twitch. Russ grumbled. He went to the high table and took up a coward's greasy limb and dangled it in front of the wolf's great head.
Wolf! Come, wolf! Move, he said.
The wolf's nostrils flared. A paw twitched. It did not wake. Russ threw down the blackened arm and wiped his hands on his suit of pelts.
All right, then, he said. We'll do it the other way.
The thing was huge. The biggest Fenrisian wolves grew to be the size of battle tanks. This pet of the Earl King's was only a little more modest than they, stretching 4 meters nose to rump. Russ stared at its belly, flexing with the slow breaths of sleep. It was not going to be easy, no matter how simple the task appeared.
A wolf of that size should be no trouble at all for the mighty Leman Russ, said the Earl King. If you can but move him, you will triumph. Careful now, your chances dwindle.
Russ grunted. He wiped his hands again, then shoved them under the belly of the wolf. Fur enveloped him. It was soft as a woman's breath, warm as a good spring day. He pushed under the beast until his forearms were completely beneath it, and shoved. Asleep, the wolf was a dead weight, as heavy and boneless as a water resupply sack for a void ship. Russ could not move it at all. He tried again. His face reddened. A grunt of effort escaped his lips. If this were a mortal wolf, he would have been able to heave the thing onto his shoulders and shift it without breaking a sweat. But like the old woman before, the wolf was as immovable as Asaheim itself. Russ stood straight and shook black hairs from his arms. The wolf had not stirred throughout the whole of his attempt.
Do you yield? Said the Earl King.
Not yet, said Russ. I am just warming up.
Why not try his paw to begin with? Said the Earl King. Where the foot goes, the rest will follow.
The man-wolves laughed.
Though remember, I said move him a foot, not move his foot.
Russ shot him a black look, then went to the rear of the wolf. The wolf's back legs were crossed. He eyed the uppermost paw, then spat upon his hands, rubbed them together, and slid them around the leg away from the sensitive pads. He bent his legs, preparing to lift. He took in a deep breath, focused, and heaved. He could not budge it. The paw was no bigger than a feasting plate, but heavier than a land raider. Back straining, Russ pulled at the paw. His face turned crimson to the roots of his hair. He let out a bellow of frustration. The paw shifted from the ground, creeping upwards fractions of an inch at a time.
Oh, a fine feat!
Shouted the Earl King.
Now you must move the rest of him.
The wolves laughed and banged their implements on the tables. Russ heaved harder, pushing from his legs, the muscles in his back on the verge of tearing. Up the paw went, past Russ's knees, then past the top of his thighs. Slow as a glacier inching its way down the mountains into the sea, Russ drew himself upright.
His teeth were clamped, knuckles of his interlaced fingers white, until he had the leg high off the ground. At this disturbance to its slumber, the wolf shivered and pushed out its paw, sending Russ flying backwards with such force he cracked the post he landed against. On breath, ragged with the effort, he tasted blood. The shadow wolves roared out their appreciation. Russ picked himself up. The wolves' laughter fell back into a cacophony of howling. Russ wiped blood from his lips with the back of his hand. The Earl King pointed at the Primarch. His long tongue hung like a wet flag at the side of his mouth, yet his words were clear.
Oh, a good effort, but you have failed again. Take your mark.
The Earl King swiped his paw through the air, and again burning pain crossed Russ's chest, so that there were three deep furrows clawed through his wolf pelts and his flesh. The blood would not stop as it should, and his furs were sodden with his vitae.
Three marks against you. Bah! I declare your life is forfeit. My Herses, my Jarls, prepare for another course in our feasting.
100 shadow wolves stood at once, upsetting their benches in their haste to be on their feet. Some snatched up their weapons with no care for the others in the piles, knocking them noisily down, while the rest exposed their teeth. They waited to pounce. Russ considered fighting them, ripping as many of the Hellkin down as he could before they tore his soul to pieces. The wolf in his heart bayed for that outcome. Kavar's words echoed in his ears.
Remember, my lord, what you are. Remember that you are more than a wolf.
Wait!
He shouted. His protest was lost in the rumpus.
Wait!
He bellowed so forcefully his shout knocked back the shadow wolves. They bristled and shrank from him.
What, my lord, of this fourth task?
Why, you cannot win it, said the Earl King dismissively. You have proved yourself unworthy. I retract my offer. My warriors, we feast on godling's flesh tonight.
The shadow wolves drew nearer again.
I demand my right to perform the fourth task, Russ said.
The Earl King snarled.
If you will, name the four things that I challenged you with.
Russ grinned.
This is the easy part, he said.
Not so easy, insisted the Earl King. The others you failed. You will prove as unwise as you are weak.
Russ laughed.
We shall see.
He swept his arm out behind him to where he had supped with the shadow wolves.
Your guest, Amarok, bade me drink his bowl dry. How could I succeed in draining that lynx when he had me attempt to swallow the savage sea? First as ice, when frozen in the hell winter. Then, when molten in the Fimble summer, he held the wolf's eye itself to my head, in pretense of help, and yet I did not burn.
The great wolf's expression set.
Very good. You have guessed well once. You will not again. Be ready, my wolves, to rend this false wolf and gulp down his flesh.
Russ gave a confident smile.
We shall see, he said. The old woman. She is bad weird. A foe no man can beat. The fate of those who do not fall in battle. Age slaughters every warrior in the end, if he does not sleep upon the red snow. Is the Muspial not her domain, starved as it is by her victims?
The great wolf growled.
Your wolf, your pet. Why? What fool do you take me for?
He pointed at the sleeping monster.
That is none other than Morkai himself, the greatest wolf of all, the lord of the lowest of death's halls.
The wolf looked up. Two heads, not one, regarded Russ with piercing eyes. One mouth yawned capaciously, then it settled back down to sleep.
No man can move death,
said Russ. It is a point we all must come to, and it cannot be dislodged by mortal effort. There. In naming the three of your challenges, I win the fourth. They were not fair. You sought to deceive me. The deceiver is always undone.
The great wolf laughed. It began as a wet grumbling noise, the growl of a predator warning a hunter from its kill, rising to become the clashing of pack ice loosed by the burning sun. It finished as peals of thunder cracking around an erupting volcano's peak.
Not so, demon of the rush. Now, you must name me. Here, you shall assuredly fail.
Russ smiled broadly and stabbed a finger at the being.
You are the great wolf. You are me.
And then he spoke the name Kavar had whispered in his ear, a name he had never borne, but that encapsulated who he was.
I know you by your spear. My spear.
A hot wind blew.
No!
The wolf howled in anguish, and all his shadow wolves howled with him.
No!
Its shadow skin writhed and turned in on itself. It grew larger, more hulking, more bestial. With a howl that shook the stars, the wolf leapt over the table. Russ sidestepped and caught it at throat and crotch, using its own momentum to pitch it over his head and send it crashing into the fire pit. Burning coals burst everywhere as the wolf yowled in the fire, its shadow fur ablaze. His warriors writhed as if they too were alight. They shredded on the air like smoke on the breeze and blew upwards, whirling away through the smoke hole towards the steely stars. When the wolves were gone, the shades of the aged servants sped after, stretching like dough, their grotesquely elongated faces shrieking. The hall followed its occupants into the sky. First the furniture fell upwards, rattle banging into the rafters and shaking loose the shingles. A bench rammed itself across the smoke hole, battering repeatedly at it, knocking the space wider and wider. Splinters of wood rained down. Another bench slammed into it, then another, stoppering the hole like debris in a storm drain, until the first bench shattered under the pressure and the others followed, folding in on themselves with dry branch cracks. A table came apart as it spun madly upwards. Tableware scythed the air like shrapnel. Russ dodged flying crocks and drinking horns. Bloody human bones bounced from his head. A spinning chair caught him a hard blow on the temple and he stumbled. Other tables joined the frantic airborne jig. They rose and fell and danced about before a sudden force hurled them up, where they smashed against the roof and crashed apart, and the fragments flew upwards into the sky. A beam dislodged and fell, ringing off the ice with an idiophone's musical impact. Shingles tore from their pegs. Rafters bent themselves in half and shot skywards. The remaining furniture made for these new holes and easier freedom. The boards of the walls shook and wrenched themselves from the ground. Snow burst within, though in truth so little remained of the hall it could no longer be said to enclose a space. The great wolf-headed posts and the timbers of the A-frames were last to go, shaking with such great violence to free themselves from the earth that two exploded into yellow splinters, and the others cracked and sundered with wooden screams as they struggled from their holes. The great wolf stood blazing in its own hearth. It clawed at itself, ripping its flesh in its agony so gravely that skin split in twain from the crown of its head to its belly and sloughed away into the growing fire. A human figure stepped from the ruin into the maelstrom of wood splinters and howling immaterial winds. Russ crouched in readiness to leap as the whirlwind lessened. The last fragments of the hall sped away. Upon the plain of snow were Russ, his host, and the great wolf Morkai, still sleeping as if nothing had occurred. Behind the death wolf, the spear of the emperor flew from the remnants of the disintegrating wall and impaled the ground, the shaft pointing to the stars. The shadow wolves were gone, and their hall so thoroughly disassembled, it was as if neither they nor the building had ever been. The hearthstone alone remained to attest to its existence, the last embers upon it burning themselves out. The figure steamed. Blood obscured its face and garb. It took a step closer to Russ. He stepped back. Adrenal compounds and other more esoteric chemicals swelled his muscles. The being took another step. The blood flickered off him, as if it were shadow, and he had simply stepped into the sunlight. And he was revealed. Russ was confronted with a version of himself. This one had none of the barbaric trappings of Fenrisian life. No wolf pelts or charms, no tattoos. His hair was cropped in a short military style to match the smart grey uniform he wore. His clothes were perfectly made but undecorated, save for a pair of collar studs fashioned in the shape of the numeral 6.
So, you spoke the truth of it. Now see the truth of it, said the false Russ.
His teeth were flat and square like a normal man's. He had none of Lehman Russ's fangs.
What are you? Said Russ. Like this, I am you, as you named me. A version of you that could have been, were you not brought to the world of winter and wolves. I am you, shaped by another world and another father. A Terran Lehman Russ, said Russ.
He looked at himself in wonder. The man was the same as him, but utterly different. Only the cold light of his blue eyes, hard as a winter's sky, was the same.
We both know that is not our name. You are as I should have been, said Russ.
The false Russ displayed his human teeth in a perfect smile, as if lecturing a student who had, in their naivety, said something foolish but amusing.
I did not say that. I appear to you as you supposed you should have been, not necessarily as we had demanded. Has it never occurred to you that you are as you were intended to be?
I was stolen away, said Lehman Russ. I was taken from my father's laboratories along with my brothers.
Were you?
The false Russ smiled.
The Primarch executioner arriving here on this harsh world of wolves, a being whose genetic gift meshes perfectly with the strain of mankind found here? This playground world of sagas and ancient stories made real, welcoming a hero to rule it.
He laughed softly, a guttural purr that remembered sharp teeth and claws and diets of hot raw meat.
Do you not think any of that is odd? Or dare I say it, convenient? It is a saga happenstance, said Russ. All the tales of heroes are full of them. It is history, shaped to fit the needs of story. Our lives are no different. Are we not the heroes of this age? My biographers will doubtless prune away the bits that do not fit. You are dangerously arrogant. So some have said. I think you mock me. If you do, you mock yourself. I do not mock you, said Russ, as I mock myself. I am a weapon made by the Emperor, no more, no less. I am no demigod, no hero from a tale. Later tales will remember you as such. It is not my place to judge those who come after. A man lets his deeds speak for him. You cannot petition the myth-makers of the future to respect you, or acknowledge you existed at all. They will or they won't. So, all this is a coincidence. This world, your name, your legion's habits, your manner. If you like, said Russ. There are no such things as coincidences, said the false Russ. Someone I knew used to say that a lot. He came to a bad end. It is also said there are no wolves on Fenris. Neither of these things are true, yet both of them are. Maybe, said Russ, and shrugged. This does not confound you. I am a man, raised by wolves and warriors in a world of ice and fire. I am a Primarch, made by the Emperor to the patterns of forgotten science. Duality is part of my nature.
The false Rust nodded as he circled around his other self, his high black boots crunching in the snow.
The civilized barbarian. The magic hater who surrounds himself with mumbling priests. The berserk thinker. The leashed hound who runs free. The Terran Fenrisian.
Aye, said Russ, that's me. It does a man no favours to be straightforward. Now I believe you owe me a boon.
The false Russ's face hardened.
You should not have won. You let me win, said Russ.
Maybe, said the false Russ,
and his shrug and mien were the exact replicas of Russ's own.
You still owe me a boon, said Russ.
Very well. One question, one answer. This is it. Ask wisely.
Before the ritual, Russ had formulated his question carefully. He could not ask how to beat Horus, because he knew that was impossible. Similar questions would lead to similar results.
You're wondering how you can beat Horus. You can't, said the false Russ, reading his thoughts.
Or perhaps their thoughts were the same, conceived simultaneously.
That is not my question, said Russ. Then speak the one that is.
The false Russ looked upwards at the sky.
Time passes strangely here. You cannot afford to delay.
Russ lifted his arm and pointed to the weapon impaling the earth.
The spear. How can it aid me in beating my brother, Horus, the fallen one, arch-traitor and destroyer of my father's dream? Are you sure it can? Said the false Russ with a mocking smile. It is a weird weapon, bound to me and I to it, though I wish it were not so. I grasp it and dream darkly. I leave it behind me and it finds me wherever I am. Gifts from the Emperor have two edges that cut both ways. There must be a purpose to it, or it would not be here. He would not have given it to me if there were no reason for it. It is the key to all of this. And that weapon could be a projection, a false hope, a lie in this den of lies. You could have thrown away your chance to win. You could have asked the wrong question. I do not think I have, said Russ. But if I have, then that is my weird. Tell me of the spear. So be it.
The false Russ held up his arm. The spear shot out of the snow and into his outstretched hand with a slap of metal on flesh. Although it lacked the snarling wolf mount and the knotwork on the blade, and was altogether more sober in decoration than Russ's version of the spear, he was in no doubt that it was the same weapon in different guise. Its golden blade shone with the same light. Its body emitted the same sensation of unease. The false Russ brandished the spear above his head and shouted,
I am the spear that sways. Gungnir am I.
His voice boomed. The spear blazed with light at the calling of its name. He stared triumphantly into Russ's eyes.
An old name, borrowed from an old god whose world was not so different to yours. This is the spear that cannot miss, that drives forever at the truth of things. It is the wolf's bane. This spear was made by the Allfather. A portion of his might was beaten into its blade. It has his strength.
It has more than that, said the false Russ. Gungnir's great gift is wisdom.
Your emperor sees much. This spear contains a portion of his sight. Because of that, it can show the truth to all men, no matter how great or meek, and no matter how painful the revelation. It is merciless in that regard. It speaks mostly of death. That is why you fear it.
I fear nothing.
That is a lie.
The false Russ brought the spear around and held it with the point uppermost. He slammed the counterweight into the ice, cracking it. Thunder rolled over the horizon.
How can it do so? Said Russ.
His misgivings about the weapon grew.
It is so because your father made it so. just as he made you the way you are. You have a role to play. The question is, will you perform it? At Alaxis, you swore not to be the unthinking weapon of the Emperor. At Terra, you convinced yourself you could continue to serve under your own terms. But you can turn aside now completely and forge your own path. Be a warlord the galaxy can respect. Not all generals need be tyrants. You can offer shelter to the innocent for a while. Leave the war behind.
There was a moment's hesitation. Only a moment. Then Russ shook his head.
I will perform my duty. As is my oath and my bond. The loyal hound, as always. I do this freely, of my own accord. Then know thyself, Leman Russ, said the false Russ, and take possession fully of these gifts your father gave you.
As fast as a striking lindorm, the false Russ drove the spear into Leman Russ's primary heart. Flesh baked in disruptor fires, bones shattered, the organ was obliterated. Gungnir was not done, but continued on, bursting from Russ's back, transfixing him on the shaft. The leaf-headed blade was black with gore in the moonlight, steaming cooked blood.
Wisdom hurts, doesn't it? Said the false Russ.
His savage glee mimicked Russ's battle joy.
Your brother was a wolf, so this spear is his bane. But you are also a wolf, and it will cut you too in the same way. As you said, his gifts cut two ways.
The false Russ yanked the spear free. Russ sank to his knees. Somehow he lived, though one heart was dead and the other beat unsurely. A gaping wound had been punched through his body. Blood poured from his chest in red cataracts. That was not the worst of the Primarch's injuries. The most terrible wound had been cut into his soul, and the burning salt of knowledge rubbed into it. He knew. He knew what he was. He knew what all the Primarchs were. His face was numb. Cold crushed his limbs. With wide eyes he looked up into the face of his killer, so familiar, yet so different.
What are we? He said,
though he knew full well, and his soul shriveled in the fires of revelation.
How could our father have brought us into this world? How could he have made us? As your brother Magnus found. Knowledge always has a price, said the false Russ with a sneer. You wish to know, and now you do. The price for the spear's awakening is your own. This knowledge will forever torment you, and eventually it will chase you from your home. But know this, Leman of the Russ. You need only wound your brother with this spear to remind the War Master that he is Horus Lupercal, son of the Emperor, and not the puppet of chaos. The rest will follow.
Thus enlightened, Leman Russ fell dead in the snow.